This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The question of handling disappointment. Because the mishandling of disappointment is unfortunately the cause of the undoing of many people. Disappointments are almost unavoidable. What they do to a person depends on the person and his approach to those disappointments. But the point was made by some of you after last week's shiur that therefore it's all very simple really. If you've got emunah, you can handle disappointment. If you don't have emunah, it's not possible to handle disappointment. That was the unterste of last week's shiur. So I thought this week we'd better discuss why then are the psychiatrists and psychologists still making money? If it's as simple as that, that all you need is a bit of emunah to be able to handle disappointment, then all disappointed people should go to rabbonim and not to psychologists and psychiatrists, and they need to go for 5 minutes, and that will be the end of it. The Rav will say, where's your emunah? And say, ah, taka, yeah. And off you'll go, and that's the end of his disappointment, and the Rav won't charge for it, and he'll be solved and cured, and the psychologist will be out of work. But it's not like that, we see. And we find that the development of emunah is in fact not an easy business at all. The Gemara says in Sotot, at the end of Daf Memches, on the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, posku anshei amono, they were no longer people of emunah. It's quite a statement. Now we know why there's so many disappointed people. If one cannot handle disappointment without emunah, and since the time of the Beis HaMikdash there's nobody with emunah, that's why there are a lot of disappointed people around the world, embittered people. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, Eilu b'nei odom shehin ma'aminim b'kodesh Baruch Hu. What does this mean, that there are no anshei emunah or amunah? Says Rabbi Yitzchok, these are people who believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there were no more people who believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Quite a shattering Gemara to learn for us people who consider ourselves from. There's no such thing. The Tanya, and if you think there is, Rabbi Eliezer, used to say, "Kol mi shiyesh lo pas besaloi v'yomer ma'uchel amocho eno elo miktanei emunah." Anybody who has something to eat now, he's got a piece of bread in the kitchen, and he concerns himself with what there will be tomorrow, lacks emunah. So they're not emunah, because people today do, they worry, what will be tomorrow? And that's a cause of a lot of the tensions and the stresses under which we live, is concern and worry about tomorrow in one form or another. Says Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, anybody, if you've got nothing to eat today, good, you're entitled to worry what will be tomorrow. You've got nothing to eat today even, well, what chance is there of there being anything tomorrow? But if you've got what to eat today, what right have you got to question and to worry about whether there'll be anything to eat tomorrow or not? That's not your business. You're not to worry about that. And if you do, you're biktane emunah. You're lacking emunah. You're one of the small emunah. It doesn't mean you don't have emunah at all, but one is of the smaller ma'aminim, if one thinks that way. Behind the Dom Rabbi Loza, and that's what Rabbi Loza said, Mai dichtiv, ki mi boz liyom katnus. What does it mean? Who makes the day of smallness cheaper? And the Gemara learns it the following way, mi gorom la tzadikim. What causes tzadikim she yisbaz be shulchonon le'osid lovay, that their table in the world to come will be a little bit inadequate. There will be something missing from the table. And that can be quite frustrating. There comes a supper time and you sit down at the table and you say to your wife, why, there's a spoon, I understand, that's for soup. And I understand that there's a cake fork, we're obviously going to have cake afterwards. But there's no knife and fork. Why is there no knife and fork? She says, because there's no main course. He said, what do you mean there's no main course? I mean, soup and cake. Yeah. She said, that's all you deserve today. That's it. The main course is missing today. You don't deserve a main course. It's very frustrating. So to come to Olam Haba and find the table is not complete, there are things missing, and we're talking about tzaddikim. We're not talking about us people. When we come there, we're in for a shock altogether. But we're talking about tzaddikim, who've never done anything wrong in their lives. Whatever, and any wrong they have done, they've done true before, there's absolute tzaddikim. Even they will come to Olam Haba, says the Gemara, and they will find a little bit missing, not quite the way it's supposed to be. What's the cause for it, they'll want to know? What have we done wrong? It's going to be the inadequacy in their characters in that they didn't believe in Ribbono Shel Olam. Tzaddikim. So we see Emuna is a most elusive characteristic to master. It's not so simple. He thought last week, if we just get Emuna, then we can handle our disappointments. Oh, just get Emuna. You see, even tzaddikim are going to come to the Olam HaEmes, and they're going to find a little bit lacking. Why? Because there's something lacking in the Emuna. Since the Beis HaMikdash is gone, there aren't people with 100% perfection in Emuna. That's quite a shocking concept to grasp, because that means there is something inbuilt into the way we live which makes the acquisition of Emuna almost impossible. That's what it means. The acquisition of complete Emuna, almost impossible. Why is that? The reason actually is not very difficult to understand. Why is it that Emunah is almost impossible to achieve? The Sefer HaChinuch says in the mitzvah of Shviras Etzem B'Pesach, Da ki ho'odom nifal kefi p'uloisov. A person operates, says the Chinuch, in accordance with his actions. When the Chinuch wrote this, it was against all schools of psychology in his day, and remains against all schools of psychology today. Says the Chinuch, a person operates on the basis of his actions. The libay v'chol machshavosov tomid achar maisov shu oisek bohem, and his heart and his mind and all his thoughts follow his actions. The secular world believes the opposite, that the actions follow the thoughts and the minds, and all you've got to do is have good ideas and good thoughts and good intentions and a pure heart, and everything else comes alright. Says the Chinuch, it's the opposite. A person operates on the basis of his actions, not his thoughts. And even an evil man in thought, a man who thinks evil, believes evil, feels evil, and his yetzahora is always bad, and his thoughts are bad all day long. If he will conquer his spirit, and he will apply himself to the observance of Torah and mitzvahs, even not lishmo, even for the wrong reasons. He's just going to force himself to do the actions without any belief. Miyad yate el hatoiv. Immediately he will start tilting towards goodness. Ubitok shelo lishmo, bo lishmo, and eventually it will come to lishmo. Ubekreach maisov, and through the power of his deeds, yamis hayetzahara. He will destroy his yetzahara. Ki acharei hapu'ulois, imshochim halavovois. For it is after actions that minds are attracted. The mind follows the action, not the action the mind. The thought follows the deed, not the deed the thought. And this is the basis of the whole of Torah and the whole of Musa. That it is necessary for the person to do the right halachas, to do the right things. That's number one. Do the right things. Afterwards you try and develop the right kavanos. You don't start off trying to develop the right kavanas, the right intentions and thoughts, and then when you've got the right intentions and thoughts, you'll start doing the deeds. It doesn't work like that at all. It is necessary for a person to do the right things, and then his deeds will, his kavanas will follow. A person who does the wrong things will always twist his mind and distort his intellect to justify that which he's doing, he will never be able to think straight if he's not acting straight. First thing is to act straight. I'm dishonest, that means he's acting not in accordance with his thoughts and his conscience. Tough luck! Let it be dishonest. It's not dishonest, it's inconsistent. Dishonesty is when one deliberately sets about to fool the world. He's not deliberately fooling the world, he just doesn't believe in what he's doing, so he's inconsistent. Good, so let him be inconsistent. Eventually he'll come right. He's doing it at least. The actions are correct, the actions are accurate. And so the whole story, the chinuch goes on to say, that's why it says, the fichach, rotzakosh boruchu bezakus is Israel, the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted to give us merit, the fichach hirbolaim toru mitzvahs, therefore he gave us lots of mitzvahs. Because he realized that the more actions we have to do, the more deeds we have to do, there's no religion in the world that has a fraction of the number of mitzvahs, of commandments, of instructions, of deeds that need to be done. Not thoughts, and not philosophies, and not emotions, and holy visions, and all this kind of thing. Just straight down to earth halacha, this is what you need to do. There isn't another religion that has this quantity and this proportion of deeds that need to be followed in order to achieve the Ritzoyin Hashem Yisbarach. Isn't it? And that's where the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to be mezakeh. And we have to be very careful to bear that in mind. Not to allow ourselves to distort Torah into a philosophy, and to distort Torah into a mystical experience, a mystical existential experience. That comes later. First and foremost is dikduk halacha. The halacha has to be meticulously carried out in accordance with both the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. That one needs to understand what the Torah wants of me. When I know what the Torah wants of me, indeed, says the chinuch, forget the kavanas, indeed. When I know what the Torah wants from me, indeed, that's what I need to do. And the kavanas, they come later. That comes afterwards. The thoughts, the intentions, the emotions are products of the deeds. Not deeds, products of the emotions. That's the chidush of the Torah. Our emotions and our thoughts are products of our actions. So it's not the other way around. It is not the action which is the product of the deed. No, the product of the thought. Once we understand this principle, we begin to understand the difficulty in the achievement of emunah. Because when it comes to emunah, when it comes to any other mitzvah, our deeds are designed to bring us to the right emotions. So you have to put on tefillin. So eventually you think what tefillin means and what it stands for and what you're doing. You've got to keep Shabbos. So eventually you think what Shabbos is and what Shabbos means and so on. All the mitzvahs that we do, you've got to give tzedakah, so eventually you start feeling something for the poor person to whom you're giving. As one goes through all the mitzvahs, each action is designed to cultivate a particular experience and emotion within the human being. But emunah is the other way around. When it comes to emunah, what are we doing all day? We're exerting our own energies and own efforts to achieve our purposes. And we see the direct correlation between cause and effect. We see that if we take our goods and we go out selling, we sell and we earn some money. If we stay at home and waste time, we don't sell and don't earn any money. So the deeds are opposite to the emotion which has to be cultivated. The emotion which has to be cultivated is that my deeds are irrelevant in the attainment of my success. That at the end of the day, as we discussed last night, at the end of the day when it comes to a yid, my success is determined by my stature, not by my deeds. And therefore I've got to believe that although I've got to go to work, that has nothing to do with my earning a living. Although I plant a seed, that has nothing to do with the tree growing. But the fact is I have to plant the seed. So I'm doing actions which cultivate within me emotions opposite to the emotion the Torah wants me to develop. That's the uniqueness of emunah. It is the only emotion which has to be cultivated against the actions in which one's operating all day, and we're exposed to it every minute of the day. Where we see people doing things and they're successful, not doing and they're not successful. The harder you work, the better you do. We see it. That's how we're raised from the day we're born. But that's how we operate. And we're told all the time, no, you've got to do it, but don't believe it. So we find ourselves having to go against our natures. Having to operate in the world with actions, which if left to their own resources will cultivate kfira, will cultivate atheism in us. And we've got to carry on with those actions, and yet develop emunah. That's almost superhuman. It's almost impossible. And therefore, says the Gemara in Sota Taka, the Mishnah says, since the destruction of the Semitus, there are no Naminim. Mi gorom la tzadikim she's bazel shukhanun osid lovay. Why is it that even tzadikim, when they come to Olam HaEmes, they will find things lacking on their table? Says the Gemara, katnu shehoyo bohem shelo yaminu b'Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because in their lifetime, there was a little tiny speck of lack of emunah. How does the Gemara know? Every tzadik? Yeah. It's almost impossible, since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, for a person operating in this world to develop absolute perfect emunah. You see, from the Gemara, that's almost impossible. It goes against the human brain. On the surface, there appears to be a Gemara against that concept. There's a machlokes. There are two views brought in the Gemara in Brachos of Lamed Ches, I think it is, between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. And when Shimon ben Yochai says, Rabbi Shmuel says, a person, Hanheg boy midas derech eretz, too, you've got to learn Torah, and you've got to learn Torah in every spare moment. But that doesn't mean you've got to stop living. Just as you have to eat, and you have to sleep, and you have to relax a little bit as well, so you have to work for a living. You've got to have a job, you've got to have a panosa, you've got to have a career. That's normal living. You've got to live in Torah normally, says Rabbi Shimon. Says Rabbi Shimon, what do you mean you've got to have a job and a career? If you've got to have a job and a career, that means you've got to, during the daytime, you've got to work. In the nighttime, you're tired. In the spring, you're planting, or whenever it is that you plant, and whenever it is that you're reaping and harvesting, there's always something to do. Torah might say, when exactly are you going to be learning Torah? Not possible. If there's a mitzvah to be learning a lot of Torah and continuous Torah, how can you also have a job? How can you have a career as well? Two different approaches. Says Abaye, Harbe osu k'rabbi Yishmoel, also b'yodo. Many people did it Rabbi Yishmoel's way. They had a normal job, they worked normally, and they learned a lot, and they were successful. Harbe osu k'rabbi Shimon ben Yochai v'lo yoso b'yodo. A lot of people did it like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and it didn't work. They failed. Us, my uncle Rebbe Yelopchin, in that case it comes out that which is considered easier by Abaya? Rabbi Yishmoel's way is considered easier. It's easier, that means, because more people were successful in going about their ordinary work and still achieving greatness in Torah, whereas those who tried Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's way were not successful, many of them. Asks Rebbe Yelopchin, it should be the other way around. Surely it is easier to be a Baal Bitochen, and surely it is easier if you're not working. If you're sitting at home and you're learning Torah all day and all night, and you every day you get something to eat, it just so happens, things go well. Surely it's easier to believe in God that way than it is if you're following Rabbi Yishmoel's system and you go out to work every day and you operate in the world of cause and effect, and yet you've got to develop emunah. Surely that's a much higher level. Explains Rebellia that there are two different things. There's emunah and there's Bitochen. These are two different concepts. And Bitochen, says Rabbi Elia, is the fruit of emunah. You can have, emunah means belief, Bitochen means trust. You can have Bitochen, you can have emunah without Bitochen, but you can't have Bitochen without emunah, says Rabbi Elia. You can have belief and not yet develop trust, but you can't have trust without belief. Belief is when an engineer comes to you and shows you drawings of a flimsy structure, made out of thin wood and a kind of paper, and he says, with this structure, if you hang on to it, I can drop you off a cliff and you'll land on the ground very, very gently. And he shows you all the theory, and he goes right through all the formulas that he's done to work this, and stresses and strains and all the engineering. He goes through the whole thing with you, and at the end he says to you, do you believe me? You say, yes, I believe you. You're a qualified man. You're a competent man. You've obviously done your homework. I believe you. He says, oh, good, I'm pleased to hear it. Come, we're going to the cliff. You're going to be the first person to try it out. If you believe me, I'm dropping you. Here's the flimsy thing. I've made it already. And you look at this thing, and it's exactly as it was drawn, but it takes you up to the cliff, and you look down. And he says, don't worry. You remember the paper. You believed. I'm dropping you now. You say, one second. Believe you? Yes. Trust you not. What's the difference? That's it. That's the difference between emunah and bitochen. One can have emunah and not have bitochen. Bitochen means to be secure. And security, says Rebellia, is not knowledge. You're not secure in knowledge. You can have emunah in knowledge. But Security is a midah. That's a characteristic. It's a feeling. It's a type of being. It's a state of being. One has to be a Baal Bitochen to feel secure. Emunah is not enough to make you a Baal Bitochen. Says Rebbe, everybody needs to be a Baal Bitochen. Everybody needs security. That's why we run around all day trying to achieve security. The stature of the person will determine in what he finds his security. Does he find security in power? Does he find security in money? Does he find security in health or in strength? Or does he find security in emunah? That's a very high level to achieve. To find one's total security in one's, the knowledge of one's belief. That's the ultimate level. But it's not automatic. One has to work on it. And therefore, says Rebbe, as far as bitochen is concerned, it is easier to be a Baal Bitochen following the method of Rabbi Yishmael. To trust is easier if you do Rabbi Yishmael's way. Why? Imagine that same engineer we talked about shows you all the sketches. And he says, right, now I'm going to take you up to the cliff. But in case this doesn't work, all you have to do is pull on this string and a conventional parachute will open. And if that string doesn't work, all you have to do is pull on the second string here, and there's a second safety parachute, and that will open. And if that one doesn't work, there's a third button that you can press here, and an electrical system of releasing a third parachute will come, so you're quite safe. Or you say, then I'm prepared to go. What's the difference? Well, so many safety things already there. This doesn't work, that will work, this doesn't work, that something will work. Then it's easy. It's easier to have trust when there are a whole lot of safety mechanisms built in. If the Ribbono Shel Olam says to me, do you believe in me? I say, yes, I believe in you, Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, right, stay home, don't go to work. See how it goes. One second, I'm going to eat tomorrow also, Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, but you believed in me? Believe, but not trust. But if the Ribbono Shel Olam says, look, go to work, I'll help you. You'll go, this customer won't give you an order, there's another customer will give you an order, that customer won't, there's another customer, there are plenty of people, somewhere or other you'll find Parnosa. Then I say, all right, I'm prepared to trust you. We'll go somewhere or other, I'll find it becomes easier to trust. And therefore, bitochen is easier following the mechanism of Rabbi Yishmael. Because there's safety mechanisms built in. How far along can you go? You're working. All you expect from the Ribbono Shel Olam is a little help. But if you follow Rabbi Yishmael in Yochai's way, then you're expecting total salvation from the Ribbono Shel Olam. That you need a lot of bitochen for. That's not so easy. That's why people feel more comfortable flying in 4-engine aeroplanes than in 1-engine aeroplane. Why do they feel more comfortable? One goes, there's another one. There's something to rely on. They feel more comfortable. Where's your trust? The pilot says, don't you trust me? Yeah, I trust you very much, but I trust you better with 4 engines than with 1 engine. That's all. That's how we are with the Ribbono Shel Olam as well. But, says Rebbe, as far as emunah is concerned, it's harder to develop true emunah following Rabbi Yishmael's route than following the route of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Because if you're following the route of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, you're not doing anything counter to the development of the emunah which you're trying to achieve. You're sitting and learning at home. So your actions are in accordance with what you're trying to develop in your emotions, the trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. But if you're following Rabbi Shmuel's route, where you're constantly involved in cause and effect, in natural cause and effect, and you're exposed, and the economists tell you why you must do this in order to achieve that, and you try tucking, even though they're economists, it works. And they tell you then to do something else, and they tell you not to do this, and you follow, and it works, and when you don't do it, then it doesn't work right, and you begin to see that there's natural cause and effect. If you do certain things, you have atzlocha. If you don't do certain things, you don't have atzlocha. And you find even, you talked Lashon Hora today, but it didn't matter, you worked hard, you still did well. The next day you were a tzaddik, no Lashon Hora, but you stayed at home, and you didn't go to work, no panosa. It's very difficult to develop emunah when you're living that kind of life, when you're involved in the normal life of cause and effect. You've got to develop emunah. You've got to believe that your efforts have nothing to do with your success. You've got to believe that it's your shachris which determines how much you're going to earn, not your efforts. Very hard. That's why it's almost impossible in living a normal life to develop absolute emunah. Because our activity opposes the emotion we're trying to achieve. And the Chinuch says our emotions are achieved through our activities. And our activities, so to say, of kfira. Our activities are agnostic activities. To go out to work is an agnostic action on the surface. The fact is we have to do it. I'll be told we have to do it. And we're going to analyze soon why we have to do it. But on the surface it appears an agnostic thing to do. Where's your trust? Stay at home and learn. You shouldn't have to go out to work.
That explains a very difficult piece of today's parasha. Rivka calls Yaakov and tells him to dress up like Esav and go and hunt and give the father Yitzchak the food which she has prepared and pretend to be Esav. In Mr. Tabak's Devar Torah this morning, he took the line that Yitzchak knew what was going on. Yitzchak was no fool, of course, and he realized that this wasn't Esav. And by that time, by the time he realized that for various reasons, that Yaakov had to get the bracha. And there are indications in Chazal that might well have been so. But the pashtus of the psukim is not that way. The superficial reading of the psukim is not that so. The superficial reading of the psukim is that he was fooled into it. But how do we understand such a thing? How can we possibly understand that Yitzchok was fooled into thinking that Yaakov was Esav? These children were not little boys. These children were in their 60s, Yaakov and Esav. So Yitzchok had lived with them both for 60 years. He must have known them by now. Their voice must have been clear. Their mannerisms must have been clear. And he still says, I call Yaakov. He still says, the voice of Yaakov. Feels the hands that are a bit furry. So what does he think? Esav. Esav trying to talk like Yaakov. Why should Esav be imitated? There's more reason for Yaakov to imitate Esav than there is for Esav to imitate Yaakov. So if you're not sure which one it is, it must be Yaakov. What's the whole thing? How could Yitzchak have been taken in? And Yaakov is very worried about it. Yaakov says, "Ula yimusheni ovi, for yisi beinov kimasateya, veheveisi olai klola v'loi brocho." Maybe my father will feel me and he'll see that I'm smooth, that I'm not hairy like Esav, and I will be like a deceitful person in his eyes, and he will give me a curse instead of a bracha. So Yaakov is very worried. Says Rivka to Yaakov, his mother said to him, Olai kilolos chol b'ni. Your curse is upon me, my son, don't you worry. What does that mean? Says Unkulus, what does it mean? Olai is amar binavuo. I have had prophecy, says Rivko, the Lord Yesun levotayo aloch, that no curse will come to you. I know for absolute certainty that you won't be cursed. So Yaakov now feels satisfied. His mother's a nevuo, and she's told him with prophecy, with nevuo, that he will not be cursed, that the scheme will go through. But it's ridiculous to think it will go through. How is Yitzchak going to be taken in by such a farce? So it's miraculous. That's how the Ribbono Shel'Olam wanted it, for various reasons. He wanted Yaakov to get the brocha in this particular way, and he will ensure, the Ribbono Shel'Olam will ensure, that contrary to all nature and to all rationale, Yitzchak will be taken in by the Sherad. Asks Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, very good. But then why go dressing him up like Esav? If you know with Nebuah it's all going to work, why bother? Come and present him and let him do it. You know with Nebuah it's all going to be successful. The charade is so transparent. It's so stupid on the surface. Go and put animal skins on him and make him think that will fool him. It's so ineffective. It's so amateurish. Why bother with it? If you don't have the prophecy, then it isn't going to work. Yitzchak will see through it right away. And if you do have the prophecy, why start with amateurish disguise? If you want proper disguise, go and get the Actors Guild involved and get them to do a proper job on him. There in the kitchen, you're going to dress him up like Esav quick. Do you think it's Purim? And turn and all of a sudden Yitzchak's going to be taken in for it. What's it all about? What is the show? What is the story? It doesn't make sense. These are very serious questions. The fact that we can read through this parasha year after year and not be bothered by it shows a childishness in us. The parasha doesn't make sense. Says with Chatzkel Levenstein, that you see, you can't do things without human effort. There's got to be some kind of human effort. You can't just sit back and rely on the miracle, even if you know with prophecy. So that even if you knew with absolute certainty that tomorrow I don't have to go out to work, because I know with Nevuah that tomorrow a big deal is going to be done for me, whether I go or whether I don't, it makes no difference. I don't have to go to work tomorrow. I would still have to go. Can't rely on the miracles. You've got to do something physical. There's got to be something practical. And that is the difficulty of Emunah, that even Rivka had to do something. Either action antagonizes the emotion is one of Nevuah, the emotion is one of prophecy, that it is not my actions which are going to fool Yitzchok, it's a nes min hashamayim, it's a miracle that Yitzchok is going to be fooled by it. And yet I have to go through the charade. And I have to believe in going through the charade, I have to believe that it's only a charade. I have to act it through, knowing that it is totally ineffectual and unimportant. And yet I have to do it. And that's why it's difficult to develop emunah. Because we're constantly acting contrary to the way we're supposed to be feeling.
You might remember when we had that talk on body language, a demonstration was done where a lady was asked to walk slowly and talk fast, or to talk slowly and walk fast, and she couldn't do it. And the lady that was chosen happened by chance to be a lady who's well trained in the arts of controlled movement, and even she couldn't do it. You can't work like that. You can't, your body can't be doing an action which is contrary to a deep inner expression that you're trying to say at the same time in an opposite direction. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. And that's why it's so difficult. Comes the question in that case, why does the Ribbono Shel Olam want us to play the fool? What's it all about? Why does he want us to go through the act? Why does he put us in such a situation where we have to do things which are contrary to the way we have to feel? We have to go to work. That we have to go to work knowing that the success of our work is in no way dependent on our efforts. Why did he make us go through something so impossible? What we're doing in that is we're being matznia the nes. We're hiding the miracle. Tznius is something that we have to develop. Tznius is that word you remember I've said so many times that isn't capable of being accurately translated into English. Modesty is not the right word. A more accurate translation is hiding. One has to hide certain things. But even the Ribbono, one has to even hide the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hatzneo leches im Hashem lekecha. Not only with one another do we have to act with tznius. We have to go act with tznius with the Ribbono Shel Olam as well. We have to, so to say, hide the Ribbono Shel Olam as well. Sweet tznius. And we learned, I think, 2 weeks ago, the Rashi and Gemara Sukkah and Tess, that there has to be tznius in one's Torah. There has to be tznius in one's mitzvahs. There has to be a middle of tznius, and we need to understand that, because that's also a peculiar thing. Remember Rashi said you don't learn Torah in the marketplace. Don't give shiurim out there in public. You've got to be a bit tznius. Maybe quietly, behind closed doors, one gives shiurim. One doesn't go and give it in public. Why? Tznius. Tznei alechesim Hashem alekecha. Why? Surely Kiddush Hashem is the other way around. Surely Kiddush Hashem is to take the city hall and to put up banners outside and posters outside and have loudspeakers outside and have thousands of people. Surely that's a Barayiv Am Hadras Melech. Surely that would be the greatest Kiddush Hashem. That's just tznius. We've got to do everything hidden. But even a miracle has to be hidden. The concept of a miracle, that there's such a thing as being matzniya the nes, of hiding the miracle. When Eliyahu and Elisha did miracles, each one with the, in the case of the where they revived the young boy from death, or the miracle of pouring out the oil continuously. Remember, she had a little bit of oil and they poured. In both cases, the Novi says to her that she must close the door. Don't do it in public, close the door. Nobody must see. Why not let people see? What a miracle! Why not talk about it? Why not publicize it? The Novi has done a miracle, a nes, a Kiddush Hashem. No, says the Novi, you close the door, you've got to be matzniya asanes. The miracle must be hidden. And so it is with the miracle of Yitzchok. That Yitzchok is not going to recognize Yaakov is an irrational miracle. It doesn't make any scientific sense or psychological sense or rational sense even to a 5-year-old child. It's totally beyond explanation. It's an amazing miracle. It's a nes goli. It has to be diminished a little bit. You have to hide the miracle. Earning a living, mon coming from heaven, that's a nes. In our day to day life, we're not supposed to do it. After they came into Eretz Yisrael, you've got to go and wet the fields. The miracle must be diminished. You've got to know that it's not the working the fields which is doing the job, it's a miracle that you've got to work the fields. You want a tree, you've got to plant a seed.
Is it the planting of the seed which made the tree? No. How is it possible a little seed? How can a little seed have within it the potential energy and resourcefulness to produce a massive tree which in itself can produce hundreds of thousands of trees like it? How is it rational? How do you explain that? One little seed that big, there's enough koyach to be able to do such a thing. How are you going to explain that? It's not possible to explain. So you've got to understand that's a miracle. But why do you have to plant the tree? Why do you have to plant the seed? Then if it's a miracle, why don't you just go there and say, tree, arise, O tree, and let the tree come up? Why go through the charade of planting a seed? It's no more or less miraculous, but it looks less miraculous. You're being matzniya the miracle. You're diminishing the miracle. Why is that important? Why do we require tzniyus with miracles? Excepting in a few specific cases, and by the way, that will explain partly why Moshe Rabbeinu struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock. He wanted to be matzniyas, and they said, Ribbono Shel, on that occasion you shouldn't have done it, on that occasion. In principle, Moshe was right, that's the normal rule. You'll try and do whatever you can to be matzniyas the nes. But in that case, the Ribbono Shel had timers on him. That's not the subject of the shiur, but one sees this all over and over again, with a few exceptions, that the desire of the Ribbono Shel Olam is to diminish the nes. Certainly since the time of the second Luchos, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the first Luchos, and Chazal say, the Medrash says, Rashi brings that when the second Luchos come, and Hashem says, Ve'ish al yale imach, Moshe Rabbeinu, you go up quietly up the mountain on your own, no thunder, no lightning, no kvilus ubrokim, nothing, nobody else with you, no man will go up with you, you go alone up the mountain to receive the Torah the second time. Says Chazal, the first ones were with kvilus ubrokim, the first ones were publicly with noise and thunder and lightning, and look what happened at the end. Sholto bohem ayin hora, there was an ayin hora it resulted from. Second one, in lecho yofe min hatzniyus, says Chazal. Comes to the second set of luchos, there's nothing more beautiful than tzniyus. Hide it away, Moshe, you go up quietly. Nobody will know. Then it will be successful. See it over and over again in the Torah. What is the element of tzniyus? The element of tzniyus is ensuring that the surface is less spectacular than the depth. That's tzniyus. And the lack of tzniyus is the opposite. A lack of tzniyus is when the surface is more spectacular than what's beneath the surface. That's the difference. And that's a peculiarly Jewish midah, the midah of tzniyus. That we like the surface to be less spectacular than the depth. You've got to peel the surface off in order to really see what's underneath. There you see the depth. And then that becomes the surface, like an onion. And you peel that off. And then you get the depth. And so it goes on, and so it goes on. And we like that in everything we do. Ein lecho yofe min hatzniyus. We find beauty where the surface only gives a subtle hint of what truly lies beneath the surface. That's Yiddish beauty. Non-Jewish beauty is where all is shouted out at the surface. You look at the surface and you see it all. That's non-Jewish beauty. That's the difference. We like a miracle to be grand only when you analyze it. But we like it to be a kind of a miracle which on the surface you might even skip over if you don't take the trouble to look. If Moshe Rabbeinu would not have stopped at the burning bush, who knows what the course of human history would have been. One thing is for sure, that Ribbono Shel Olam wouldn't have said, "Hey Moshe, why didn't you look?" That he wouldn't have done. Didn't see for Pharaoh, that's tough luck. Who knows what would have been our lot had Moshe Rabbeinu not stopped himself to analyze the miracle and notice this is something peculiar. In next week's Sedra, when Yaakov goes along and stops at the place, and Chazal say that he went on further, and then he suddenly realized, haven't I passed the place where my ancestors davened? And he went back to find the place where they davened, and that's where he stopped, at Beto. Why didn't the Ribbono Shel Olam stop him on his way and say, "Hey, there's a dream on the script says here you're supposed to dream, stop"? No. Go, you didn't notice, go. Either there'll be no dream, and that will affect the course of humanity, the future course of humanity, fine, what can you do? The Ribbono Shel Olam won't interfere. That much he expects from us. Just to notice something on the surface enough to stop and dig. That the Ribbono Shel Olam expects from us. Maybe that's why Yiras Hashem is, in Torah is compared to Matmonim, to hidden things, to gold and silver. That's how it works with gold. A prospector goes and looks, there's no sign, the layman doesn't see sign. You buy a property and you sell the property. You buy the property for 10,000 Rand and you sell it for 12,000 Rand and you're in heaven, 20% profit. And the Chochem buys it from you for 12,000 Rand and sells it for 10 million Rand. What's the difference? He knows what's underneath the surface. You only saw the surface. He analyzed. He used Chochmah. He used wisdom. The eye can only see the surface. But the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us a mind. And the mind, through an analysis of the surface, can remove the surface and can see underneath. But one thing we don't want. We don't want disappointment when you remove the surface. That's not a Jewish experience. The Jewish dynamics has to be towards depth, and the only way you can create the dynamics towards depth is to make the depth more exciting than the surface. Then you will want to take the surface off and go deeper, and you will want to take that off and go still deeper, and want to take that off and go still deeper. That's the Jewish experience. That's the Torah experience. Secular experiences, you start with a big bang, and it looks magnificent, and you want to carry on, you think there's more coming, and you take the surface off. So not quite so magnificent anymore. You try one more layer off and it's already getting boring and you drop it. That's the difference. And that's the tznius which applies in everything. And some people, if you meet them the first time and one's bowled over totally. So impressive. So dynamic. So exciting. And you meet them the second time, the third time, and you've had them for 6 months, for a year already, the luster's worn off a little bit. Not there anymore, the excitement's gone. And you have other people, sneer-sticky people. You meet them the first time, you almost don't notice them. But there's something on the surface that glints, something that says this, that it's worth spending time on this individual. So you spend a bit of time. And you find the more time you spend, the more comes out. And the more layers that are removed, the more depth is revealed, the more wondrousness is revealed. That's a total personality. It doesn't bowl you over the first time. Constant increasing excitement and increasing dynamicism. That's what one does. We don't like it. We start a shiur or a series or an institution. So institutions have never started with big crowds. It starts with small. Builds up slowly over the time. Gets bigger and bigger little by little. Rather than to start with a bang and then it gets boring and it starts going down and down and down and down. That's not a total experience. Gashmius, material things deteriorate with time. That is the effect that time has on material things. They decay, they degenerate. Spiritual things improve with time. And the test of whether an experience is spiritual or material, or whether an individual is spiritual or material, or whether a place is spiritual or material, is does it mature with time, or does it deteriorate with time? That's why I think I mentioned to you once, I forgot where I saw it. A beautiful pshat in the Chazal that says that it's a nice thing to give an elderly person a good wine. An elderly person enjoys a good wine. Why is it such a nice thing to do? And I saw it explained because it encourages him. He realizes that really good things improve with age. And that's important for him to know that. That a spiritual being gets better as he gets older. An athlete, he hits his prime at 25 and then it's downhill all the way. A secular person hits his prime in his late 20s and then it's downhill all the way. A Torah dicker person, a Ruchnius dicker person, he hasn't even, he's a child in his 20s. He's 30, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, he's starting, 80s. There he's becoming great. And he gets greater and greater and greater. That's the power of Ruchnius. The deeper you go, the more there is. On the surface, there's very little, just enough to tell you that there's something deeper down, that it's worth taking off the surface. That's why we have to be matzniya a miracle. We want the initial impact to be less than the deeper analysis. We want the passerby to see the farmer planting the seed. So when that same passerby comes back next season and he sees a field full of produce, he says, "Ah, I know why. The farmer planted the seed." Okay, you've missed the point, fellow. Drive on. Fine. Nothing. But if he says, "One minute, how big was the seed he planted? Is it possible that from that little bag of seeds that he had, there's this field? From one little bag? How come?" That's Moshe Rabbeinu stopping at the burning bush. Ah, now you want to analyze, you want to study botany in order to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam more. Fine. Now you can. Now I'll start teaching you the wonders of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'll start teaching you botany. I'll start teaching you about cells and cell divisions and about energy and where it's stored and how it... There's nothing there. That's surface without teichin. That's presentation without content. And that we don't like. There must be presentation, but the presentation should be a little bit less effective than the content. But when you go over it and you revise it and you analyze it, you find more and more and more in it. That's a Torah experience. And so even Rivka had to hide the miracle, so that a foolish passerby will say, sure, Yitzchak was taken in. She dressed him up to look like Esau. And that poor old man, Nebuch. What do you expect of him? He's an old man, failing eyesight. They dressed the one twin to look like the other twin, so he made a mistake. Fine, that's how you understand the parasha of goods. Read on. That's how she had to do it. But if you stop and analyze and say, we know who Yitzchak was, and we know how old Yaakov and Esav was, it doesn't make sense. Ah, then you'll find the miracle. Miracles have to be sought after. Miracles have to be dug for. Miracles have to be analyzed for. They should not strike you in the eye the moment you see them. That's not a mess. That's not how we want a miracle to be. In that case, there's a difficulty in a medrash further on, since this evening is Nitzah Hashem, the last Mitzvah Shabbos here this year, because my family and I will in Nitzah Hashem be going to Eretz Yisrael next Mitzvah Shabbos. I've got to give you a shiur from a few parashas ahead as well. The medrash says a strange, peculiar medrash. Ashrei agever asher som Hashem miftochi. Happy is the man who trusts in Hashem, places his trust in Hashem. Ze Yosef. Who's that? Who trusts in Hashem? Absolutely, that's Yosef. Al yedei she'oma l'sar amashkim zechatani v'izkatoni. Since he asked the butler to remember him to Paro, litozit lo yishtei shonim. He got an extra 2 years in jail. And everybody asks, but that's a contradiction in terms. You're praising Yosef as being the Baal Bitochim, and then you say he got an extra 2 years in jail because he asked the Saramashkim to remember him. He should have trusted in Hashem. Shouldn't have asked the Saramashkim, shouldn't have asked the Batah to remember him. The answer that is given is no. That shows what a Baal Bitochim he was. He was on such a level that for him to ask the Saramashkim wasn't necessary. An ordinary person wants to ask the Batah, good, okay. But Yosef, you see from the fact that he was punished for such a minute detail, he was punished with 2 years in prison. You see how the Ribbono Shel Olam held him in what esteem as a Baal Bitochin. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam views Yosef as Ashrei Agever Asher Som Hashem Miftachi. According to what we're doing, it's difficult. Yosef was right. He knew the Ribbono Shel Olam was going to get him out of jail, but you've got to reduce the miracle. Something to reduce the miracle. So he asks. So he knows it's not the battle who's going to get him out of jail. Yosef HaTzadik knows it's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Asher Agever Asher Som Hashem Miftochi. He trusts in the Ribbono Shel Olam. He merely asks the battle in the same way as Rivka dresses up Yaakov to look like Esau. That's where Yosef got it from. He realized that you can't rely on a miracle totally, and even if you are relying on a miracle totally, you've got to make it appear as if it's not quite such a miracle. So he asks the battle to remember him to Paro. What's so terrible about that? The answer is, it wasn't necessary. Because if the butler would have remembered him to Paro without Yosef asking it, it still wouldn't have looked like such a miracle. It wouldn't have been an impossible thing. Let's say Yosef wouldn't have said anything to the butler. And the story would have unfolded just as it did. That they would have got into, the butler would have got out and got back to his job with Paro. Paro would have had his dream, wouldn't have known how to resolve it. And the butler of his own would have said, I remember a young boy in jail who used to interpret dreams. Would the passerby have said, what a miracle? No, the passerby would have said, that's normal, that's obvious. The story would have made absolutely perfect sense. Therefore, Yosef went one step further than was necessary. If the only purpose in his shtadlus, if the only purpose in one's efforts is to create a charade, to make it appear not totally miraculous, just to throw a veil over the miracle, then in that case it was unnecessary because the veil was there in any case. It wasn't a nes golui. It was already a nes nistar. It was already a natural looking miracle, one that did not need to be further hidden. That's all. With that understanding, we can reanalyze the machlikis between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael.
Who views the earning of a living as a greater act of miracle, as a greater miracle? Rabbi Yishmael, who says that a Jew must go and work? Or Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, who says that you can stay at home and learn Torah, you mustn't go to work? Who sees the act of earning a living as a greater miracle? Normally we would say, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, stay at home, it's all totally miraculous, you don't have to go out and work. Rather than Rabbi Yishmael, who says, no, you've got to go and do something. But with our new analysis, it's fakir, it's the other way around. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, earning of a living is not so miraculous in its appearance that you need to do anything to hide it further. You sit and learn Torah. So what will happen? You'll walk outside and you'll trip over a treasure. Nobody will say that's a miracle. It can happen. And you'll take the treasure and you'll take a little bit of the money from the treasure and you'll put it on the stock exchange, and overnight the stock exchange will quadruple. Nobody will say it's a miracle. The economists will explain it. You don't need to hide it. You can sit at home and learn, and the living will come to you, the parnosa will come to you, and it is not necessary for you to do anything to veil it, to be master it, to hide it. It's not necessary, it's hidden enough already. Just as Yosef really did not have to do anything. He could have stayed in jail and waited, and the miracle would have occurred just the same and wouldn't have looked any more miraculous to the innocent passerby. No, says Rabbi Yishmael. Earning a living is a miracle, an absolute miracle. You're just getting it. It's a miracle enough as it is. That you should go out and earn a living, that's already a miracle. It's an absolute mess. How should it happen? If you work it out, it doesn't make sense that everybody should be able to earn a living. Who's supporting after all? What are we all supporting each other? Where's it all coming from at the end of the day? It doesn't make sense. It's a miracle. At least hide the miracle. At least go through the normal acts of economic activity to make it look normal so that the economists can in fact explain it. But just to stay at home, and a miracle will come, the stock exchange will go up without your doing anything. That would be a nice scholar, you can't do that. You've got to be master, you've got to hide it. That's the machlekes. And we pass in like Rabbi Yishmael, that the earning of a living is such a miracle that we have to go out. Certainly the masses of us, yechidim, individuals, is a different story, but the ordinary person has to go out and has to try and hide it. But we need to know that all we're doing is a charade. It's all a big act. There's a din, that's a chiyuv, we have to do it, we have to minimize the miracle, and we have to go through the motions of fooling the economists into thinking that we're doing something to earn our living. That's what we've got to do. So when the naive economist passes by, he says, I know why he's done well, because he invested his money in this rather than that, and because he knocked out his competition here, and he advertised there, that's why he did well. Because say, oh, Tucker, that's what you think? Good, carry on. But the deep person will stop and say, but it doesn't make sense because I know somebody else who did the same and it didn't work. Oh, so you've got to start working out. Not so posh. There's a Ribbono Shel Olam who decides who yes, who no. Now you're on to depth. We've hidden a veil. We've thrown a veil over the miracle. It's not quite as dramatic and spectacular on the outside as it is on the inside. When you start analyzing Panosa, that's where you see the miracles. You look on the surface, it all looks calm, it all looks normal. That's tznius. That's emunah. Tznius is the practice of tznius. Emunah is the perception of tznius. Tznius is throwing the veil over spectacular things. Emunah is perceiving the spectacularity under the veil. That's what emunah is. And that really is the essence of the Torah style. We've talked over the last few weeks about style. I think tznius is a way of doing things. Emunah is a way of doing things. It's not just an action. You can't say, this is tznius, this isn't tznius. It's a way of doing things. This is our concept of yur. That a person should not appear to be more frum than he is. He should appear to be less frum than he is. That's tznius. He should be frummer than he looks. That doesn't mean that he doesn't do things which are frummer than he feels. Don't forget the chinuch. After all, one has to keep mitzvahs and halachas even if one doesn't have a full appreciation for them. But one has to be very careful when these halachas become public. On the external manifestations, the outward expressions of our Yiddishkeit have to be subdued a little bit. We must look a little bit less frum than we are. When we get to know each other, we should be impressed as we get to know one another better and better how frum that person really is, what a real Yiddish Shemayim is, rather than to say, ha, what a real Yira Shemayim I thought he was. That's the lack of tznius. That's the Jewish style. To develop it as we go deeper, so there's more and more in it.
We have to practice that in everything we do, to make sure that in lecho yofe min atzniyus, to see that what's on the surface is not as spectacular as what's inside. But also we have to perceive it. We have to stop, we have to question, we have to realize that the whole world around us is a charade. It's all a big show. And what's on the surface is nothing near as spectacular as what lies beneath. Go outside and look at the stars, not here in Johannesburg on a cloudy day. Go outside when it's not cloudy and not in Johannesburg. Go outside in the countryside where there's no lights and there's no pollution on an evening where there are no clouds. Have a look at the stars and be impressed. But don't stop there. That's not enough. That's just the surface. Then you go to the planetarium. Then you start reading. Then you figure out what it's really all about, if you really want to be impressed with the stars. And you look at beautiful flowers and wonderful trees, at a magnificent sight of mountains. You go to the Drakensberg, see the mountains, be impressed. That's only the surface. If you want to really perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam and all that, take an interest in it. Read up a little bit about it. Study a little bit about it. Question. Be curious. Be inquisitive. Want to get beneath the surface a little bit. And how much more so in the area of Torah itself. Don't just read the surface. Don't just cover the ground. Looks impressive, but that's nothing compared to what there is in layer after layer. As one analyzes, questions and understands, one finds more and more exhilaration, more and more thrill. Never will it happen that one will encounter, chas v'sholom, an emotion of disappointment, that it seemed so good and when I analyzed it there was nothing in it. That will never ever happen. As one goes deeper into it, one's constantly amazed at how much one missed the first time one saw it. That's the experience of Limud HaTorah. That's the experience of the perception of depth. That's the experience of Emunas Hashem.